Lou Cannon covers the White House for the Washington Post and has been following Ronald Reagan's fortune since he was governor of California. So when the president said he'd hold his first news conference since the flap broke over the Iranian connection, Cannon was especially interested in how Mr. Reagan would handle himself.
What is important is whether he meets the credibility test.
Reporters fired tough, pointed questions, and Mr. Reagan's answers on U.S. dealings with Iran were his most detailed on the controversy so far. On the issue of the secret way the dealings were conducted,
there was no deception intended by us. There was the knowledge that we were embarking on something that could be of great risk to the people we were talking to, great risk to our hostages, and therefore we had to have it limited to only the barest number of people that had to know.
Did that include Secretary of State George Shultz? State says he got only dribs and drabs, something disputed by one of the 18-month operations architects, former National Security Advisor Robert McFarlane.
It was not kept from the Secretary of State. I'm somewhat surprised at the portrayal that it was, for I told him repeatedly and often of every item that went on in this enterprise.
There had been talk that Shultz would resign over the issue and that retiring Senator Paul Laxalt of Nevada would replace him. Laxalt said that was news to him.
So far as I know, the secretary isn't going to be going anywhere other than remain on his job, and there's been absolutely no contact made with me about replacing him.
Reports of Shultz's imminent departure also surprised President Reagan.
He has never suggested to me in our meetings that resignation, and in fact he has made it plain that he will stay as long as I want him, and I want him.
While the degree to which Secretary Shultz was kept up to date remained unclear, there seemed little doubt about how much President Reagan told leading members of Congress.
He didn't have to. It's perfectly legal. There was no need to. The President of the United States has that authority.
Chief of Staff Donald Regan's contention is questioned by the ranking Democrat on the Senate Armed Services Committee, Georgia's Sam Nunn.
18 months or 12 months to notify Congress on something of this nature, it seems to me, was fundamentally a violation of the spirit, if not the letter, of the law.
And as for the type of military equipment and how much of it was shipped to Iran, questions there, too. House Majority Leader Jim Wright says earlier reports were at odds with what National Security Advisor John Poindexter told him the day after the president's news conference.
While we were advised on the 12th that there were 1,000 TOW missiles, I am advised this morning by Mr. Poindexter that really there were 2,008 TOW missiles. Those are the anti-tank missiles that were sent.
The president had addressed criticism of the weapons sales and failure to notify congressional leaders at his news conference by pledging,
I have directed that no further sales of arms of any kind be sent to Iran. I have further directed that all information relating to our initiative be provided to the appropriate members of Congress.
The vice chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee, Vermont Democrat Patrick Leahy, said he couldn't wait to get started.
I think the first question I'm going to ask is, what did we really expect to get out of this? The president says it wasn't an exchange for hostages. Well, we demolished 10 years worth of anti-terrorist policy. What did we get in return? What did the Iranians give up? What did they do? What did they change? It appears really to be nothing.
But Robert McFarlane thinks the administration's goal of trying to break new ground with what it called more moderate elements in Iran can still be reached.
We are still in a position to exploit the wish of Iranian officials who wish to reorient their policy over time. I think this can be done for in the days ahead by properly defined diplomats in the Department of State.
House Republican Leader Robert Michael has no problem with the administration's intent to contact certain parties in Iran, but
where I would part company, I guess, is the decision then that was made that there would be an exchange or a sale of arms that that then is perceived by the public as being a swap for prisoners or for hostages, which then does violence to the one thing that we said we would never do, and that would be to deal with terrorists.
To that, McFarlane pleads guilty.
It takes on the appearance of a transfer in exchange for hostages. It wasn't. It wasn't intended that way. Surely it does appear that way. And consequently, it was a mistake. A mistake for which I take responsibility. It was bad judgment.
ABC's Bob Zelnick says the president got bad advice from a number of people on the Iranian affair.
First of all, there's McFarlane and Poindexter of the NSC who managed the Iran affair. There's Donald Regan, who didn't protect the president from his own advisors as the White House chief of staff is supposed to do. In the view of many, there's Secretary Shultz, who made public his opposition when the president was already under siege. And of course, what no administration insider is willing to say is that this may be one case where the president failed himself.
Mr. Reagan did not shy away from responsibility during his news conference.
I consider the risks of failure and the rewards of success, and I decided to proceed, and the responsibility for the decision and the operation is mine and mine alone.
And the president's decision to deal with Iran the way he did has damaged U.S. credibility with its allies on the issue of dealing with states that support terrorist activities. As Andrew Neil of the Sunday Times of London sees it...
It's let the French off the hook, for example. The French have been doing their own shady deals with Syria. Well, nobody in the United States can now criticize the French, given what your government's been doing with Iran. I have to say that here in London this morning, we in Britain feel slightly alone, because we're the only country now with a consistent anti-terrorist line.
Whether or not other countries have been involved in shipping weapons to Iran with America's blessing has also been a running issue. Without naming names, the White House has acknowledged third-party participation. And in Tel Aviv, correspondent Dean Reynolds says there's not much doubt which country was involved.
ABC News has been told that U.S.-supplied arms to Iran included several shipments of weapons and ammunition that passed out of the Israeli port of Eilat. Sources took strong exception to the White House version that the U.S. assistance to Tehran was very limited in scope. Officially, the Israelis are refusing to say whether they were the third country in the arms for Iran triangle. But sources say privately that arms shipments from Israel to Iran have been going on for years. Why? Because the Israelis believe that as long as Iran has enough arms to fight Iraq, neither country will have the time to attack Israel. Dean Reynolds, ABC News, Tel Aviv.
President Reagan has denied that his dealings with Iran were expressly designed to win the freedom of American hostages being held by pro-Iranian factions in Lebanon. But he did tell reporters at his news conference...
If there had not been so much publicity, we would have had two more that we were expecting.
That would have been AP's bureau chief in the Middle East, Terry Anderson, and Thomas Sutherland, the dean of agriculture at American University in Beirut. It had been hoped that they might have been freed at the same time as David Jacobson. As reporter Lou Cannon mentioned at the start of this program, Mr. Reagan's credibility was at stake during his news conference. A poll ABC News took right after his broadcast appearance shows it still is. Jeff Alderman is director of the ABC News polling unit.
This poll shows that a majority of Americans feel the president has been lying to them about the Iran arms deal. And that has produced a dramatic 10-point drop in his overall approval rating, one of the biggest one drops we've ever seen.
Here's the way some of those people express themselves.
His credibility leaves a lot to be desired now, I think.
I thought he did comparatively well considering the circumstances.
I think he's a hypocrite. And I think he deserves to be held fully responsible.
But as pollster Alderman points out...
This does not mean that the Reagan presidency is over or anything like that. He's still got a majority of the public, 56% or so, approving of his overall handling of the job. And that's a pretty good reservoir of support. At the same time, it's a big one-time drop, and I think it's going to hang on to us for a while.
Senate Democratic leader Robert Byrd just hopes Mr. Reagan cuts his losses quickly.
This situation is really creating a creeping paralysis that is going to continue to sap the energies and the time of the administration, and the credibility of the nation is at stake. And I think the sooner the president acts quickly and decisively to put this thing behind us, and just say we made a mistake, we goofed, we want to clean it up.
And the congressional hearings that have already started seem bent on doing just that. While the debate over the Iranian affair was going on, terrorists with no specific ties to the Middle East were murdering a prominent businessman in Paris. George Bess, the president of Renault Auto Company, was gunned down as he left his home. ABC's Pierre Salinger tells us about the group which claimed responsibility for the shooting.
Action Direct is the best-known internal French terrorist group, has been involved in terrorism in this country for 7 or 8 years now. Their last major attack in this country came in January of 1985 when they killed General René Audran, who was the head of the arms sales section of the French Defense Ministry. They have been involved also in a number of bombing attacks, including three last week, which caused no deaths but some material damage against institutions dealing with South Africa.
The victim of this week's murder, George Bess, was given credit for a major financial turnaround at Renault, a state-owned automaker. With last week's conviction and the subsequent 30-year prison sentence for Eugene Hassenfuss by a Nicaraguan people's court, attention has been turning to the captured American's eventual fate. The Nicaraguan justice minister, who served as the chief prosecutor at the trial, says he opposes any pardon for the gunrunner. President Daniel Ortega says had Hassenfuss been convicted of a similar crime in the U.S., he'd have probably been executed. Alejandro Bendana, the Secretary General of the Foreign Ministry, says that while a pardon is possible, it is unlikely because of who Hassenfuss is and the fact that he was helping the people sworn to overthrow the government.
Within the system of justice in Nicaragua, a pardon is theoretically available by recommendation of the National Assembly for decision of the president. But again, Mr. Hassenfuss is not an ordinary prisoner, and he was not dropping candy over from Nicaraguan skies last October 5th.
But Sergio Ramirez holds out hope. He is Nicaragua's vice president, and this past week, Ramirez was in Wisconsin to meet with the Hassenfuss family. It is the vice president's contention that a pardon could help improve relations between Nicaragua and the U.S. After meeting with Ramirez, Eugene Hassenfuss' sister-in-law, Sylvia Hoffer, was optimistic.
Our meeting was very enlightening and very hopeful.
What might help is the fact that Nicaragua and Wisconsin have been sister states since 1965. More than 70 organizations in Wisconsin provide medical, agricultural, and other types of assistance to Nicaragua.